Welcome to Cross Points, a podcast to help you make Christ the center of your life. Brought to you by Cross Point Christian Church in Grosse Pointe Woods, Michigan. I'm your host, Gary Abu Jr. In an increasingly busy world, it can be difficult to stay connected to your church between Sundays. It's our hope that this podcast will help to fill that gap. On this episode, we'll be talking about some of the history of Cross Pointe Christian Church since it was originally planted as Third German Baptist Church in the city of Detroit way back in 1897. Pastor Nate, welcome to the program.
I'm back, and good to be back.
Yeah, we're glad to have you back with us. Today, we're going to be talking about our church's quasquicentennial 125th anniversary.
Well done, Gary. You nailed the word.
Been practicing for weeks. It's really, really a hard word to say, and I actually didn't know it existed.
Credit to Ed Cantrell, I believe, discovered quasquicentennial. If it was Jason, he'll be angry that I said that, but I'm pretty sure it was Ed.
Well, if you listeners can say that word five times fast, we would love to know about it. Send us a recorded video. We'll be really interested to hear. But in a serious note, we'd love to just talk a little bit today about our church's 125th or 125-year history. We'd love to kind of just start out, Nate. Could you tell us sort of the who, what, where, when, and why of our church's starting? Like, where did it get started? When did it get started? And how did it get started?
Yeah, so a lot of the information I'm going to give is from a little booklet that was made from our 90th anniversary. And so that's about the best history that I have that's been compiled. So the first church that was established that is still of record being our church was Third German American Baptist Church. And that was in 1897. So as I understand it, and as this booklet has, which we'll make available, Third German American Baptist Church of Detroit started because a group of 82 members from First German Baptist Church asked if they could leave and start another church. To sound similar to like a church plant.
So yeah, so they were interested to expand the reach of their church, and they went out and planted another campus. Would that be accurate to say?
I would not call it a campus. They were an independent church.
Okay.
They left with blessing from First German regular German Baptist Church. They had long names back then. And so this church was at Grandy and Trombley in Detroit. So you can look that up on Google Maps if you would like. And it was a rough, from record, it sounds like it was a rough start. There were 3 years of, it says the word they used was turmoil and division. After about 3 years, a pastor, Reverend Otto, who was the former pastor of the mother church, kind of brought the people together, and they were united, and they called their pastor there. So it was a tough start for Third German American Baptist Church.
And that's not all too uncommon with church plants. And we even see that in the New Testament, in the epistles.
Mm-hmm.
They're speaking to church plants, essentially, of the day. And there's all kinds of turmoil and challenge and difficulty going on with the new churches that we see in the Bible. And so it's a longstanding thing that getting a group of people together to start a church is no easy feat. And that's something that still continues today. So once they got past that sort of period of turmoil and kind of got past the startup phase, if you will, what was kind of the next iteration of what was going on with our church?
So they kind of got established. One of the pastors came back, F.G. Wolter. Seeing as it's German, it's probably Wolter, but I'm not 100% sure. They kind of got established, and they began to minister in the area. And so once they preached in German. And so what happened was in the community that they were in, they had different people groups come in, and it became difficult to continue to carry on with the German work. And so they began to have to change and adjust. So some interesting facts, and these I think are important. In 1902, they got gas lights installed. Big deal. And the first organ was dedicated. To me, that's amazing. We have organs, and yet we're still using gas lights. Fascinating. In 1905, the Ladies Society was organized, so we still have a women's ministry today. I think we could compare those two. The church mortgage was burned, and I think the most important news here is in 1908, the sisters of the church were permitted to hold sewing classes in the back room.
Big deal at the time.
Now, we can chuckle or whatnot, but I am sure that sewing classes were beneficial to the community in some way in 1908. So I'm just glad that they were permitted to hold them in the back room, you know.
I mean, they weren't allowed to vote at that time, so this is probably a big deal to allow things like that.
We've come a little ways, and it's a good thing. Yeah, so that church existed until 1914, I believe. And that church transitioned, as part of the cultural differences and things like that, to Newland Avenue Baptist Church. And so this was at Newland and Chapin in Detroit. And the first original name was Deutsch Amerik... I'm going to butcher this. I'm not German. I'm Slovakian. Deutsch Amerikanische Baptisten Gemeinde. And that is the exact way to pronounce that.
We'll put that in the show notes so that you can do a better job than Nate if you're able to.
For the Germans that are still in our church, please don't be angry with me. I will work. I'll do better. But in 1914, they changed the name to Newland Avenue Baptisten Gemeinde. And so they built that church. There's a chapel, and they also built a parsonage. So there was an old chapel. They built a new chapel, and the old chapel became the parsonage for the pastor.
So this was a relocation, a renaming, same church.
Yeah, sounds that way.
Did you find in your research that there was any continued turmoil when they transitioned to this new location, to this new renamed sort of new iteration of the church? Was there still growing pains as there were the first time around?
Well, it is interesting. So they bought this new property, which became Newland. There's not a lot of information about it that I have. Now, we may have people in our church, and if you want to come forward and give us more information about that, please do, because I just don't have it. But there's just not a lot of information for it. So either, here's my assumptions. Either things are just really good. They were rolling. They bought this new chapel. They built a new chapel next to it, turned into a parsonage. Things were good. Or it was a tough time. I mean, they did burn their mortgage, so it wasn't like they had all these high debts and things. But there's just not a lot of information about it, other than it had a very German name, and then they changed it to a more readable for Nate name.
And, you know, I just want to point out, you know, thinking historically here, at that time in the United States, especially around here, there were a lot of people groups coming from other countries. And generally speaking, people groups stayed kind of to themselves.
Yeah.
They integrated for business purposes for different reasons, but generally, culturally speaking, they stayed kind of together. Partly that was because of language, history, common faith traditions, anything like that. And so when I hear something like that other people groups besides Germans were starting to come to the church, even though the services were in German, I think that's a really powerful testimony to the reach and the impact that the church was starting to have at that time. I know in my own family, we come from a Lebanese tradition. And around the same time in the early 1900s, my family came over from Lebanon, Christians coming from an area that wasn't entirely Christian, and they kind of stuck with the other Lebanese Christians and Arabic Christians in the area. And they would go to church where it was in Arabic, just the same kind of as you're talking about. And I don't remember there being a lot of diversity in that church tradition. And so to hear that there was some diversity and that caused a need for change and they responded to that, I think it's a really, really great thing that to hear in our church's history.
There definitely was a tension there. Do we only do German ministry? And it was still predominantly that way. But they did have to adjust things because of the growing different ethnic populations in Detroit. Very interesting. It does kind of indicate on the opposite side that it was very exclusive, and Christians do tend to do that. And there's lots of reasons for that, language, culture, that sort of thing. But what is interesting is our church has changed ethnically over time, which is good. That's a good thing. I don't know. It's encouraging to look at.
Absolutely. I mean, we're called to make disciples of all nations. And so when we see that the church body represents that kind of diversity, we're fulfilling a biblical mandate and command, and that's encouraging. It should be encouraging. So after this period of time where we don't have a ton of information, what would you say kind of happened next? What was the next big versioning that took place with our church?
So Third German American Baptist Church transitions in 1913 to Newland Avenue Baptist Church. And then, as my records show, I think this is correct, in 1918, they moved to Burns Avenue. So this is Burns and Chapin, and became Burns Avenue Baptist Church. This church is still existing today. I believe there's still a pastor there. In fact, just a year or two ago, a bunch of our members of our church went and saw the old church. And so Burns Avenue Baptist Church is still, you know, a standing part of our history. So yeah, it's It's interesting.
And so that, you know, just for our listeners to make this connection because of the times that we live in right now, we've been talking a lot about 1918 for the last year and a half because that was the time of the Spanish flu pandemic.
Yeah.
And so, again, just to think about the times that people were living through at that time, not too dissimilar to what we're living through today, and yet they were growing, progressing, continuing to multiply the impact that they were able to have out in the community for doing the work of God. And so it's just something to kind of take note of there, that, you know, God's work will not be thwarted by anything that's going on in the world.
That is the truth. Very much so. So Burns Avenue, they're still preaching in German. Still preaching and teaching in German, which is just amazing. For a long time, they eventually transitioned to English. But for a while, in the early years, they were still predominantly German speaking and German ministering church. What's interesting about Burns Avenue is that there was a strong missions emphasis. So yes, there's preaching and teaching in German, and that sounds exclusive. Yet, they're still going out into the world, as you just mentioned, and trying to establish missionaries. And Pastor Graff, one of the pastors of the church, the first one of Burns Avenue from 1911 to 1928, used to be a missionary in Cameroon, West Africa. So local missions work happened. You had the radio show, which we talked about in the previous podcast, and then there were other missions programs and ministries reaching out into the community. There were Sunday schools, Saturday Bible school, which I don't think exists anymore, Women's Missionary Fellowship, the radio show, Sunday school, music, and more. And so, yes, they were preaching early on in German, but they were still very much reaching out into the world.
So the outreach is, I think, a continuing legacy that our church has today. Missions is still a big piece of our identity. It's a big part of the work that we do in our ministry, both, you know, locally and globally, is ministering to others, but also that missions work.
Mm-hmm.
So as the Burns Avenue Church got established, how long did they stay at that location?
So it looks like, now my date might be minorly off this, but I believe 1955 is when Greater Mac and Old Amile, which may have been called Baseline back in the day. So where we are currently was through 1955. So in that time, though, from 1918 to 1955, there's a lot of stuff that happened. There were other churches that were planted. So in 1928, the first mission church is what they call it. I think we call it a church plant now. It was Liberal Avenue Baptist Church in Detroit. Trinity in, Liberal Avenue Baptist Church, Trinity in Warren, and another church, which looks like North Point or Bible Baptist. They all kind of merged together and began to establish a church. In 1930, they switched to English. So big year, 1930. Hmm. Lots going on. Switched to English. Very exciting. They also, in 1920, they burned their mortgage again. There's a lot going on. There were some issues in 1935. This is a kicker, right? This is because of the language problems. 47 members requested letters to form Connors Avenue Baptist Church. Now, Ridgemont Baptist, I don't know if that's the same now, in East Detroit. So there's still issues. Churches have difficulties. And so one of those was language issues. I don't know exactly everything that happened. Maybe it was that they weren't preaching in German anymore. Maybe there's just people in the church who didn't understand English well, and so they requested to leave. 1938, Echoes of Heaven begins. 1947, they purchased a property on Vernier, which they then sold because of inadequate parking. And then they bought 1952, they purchased the property here, which I believe is what's called Baseline. Now, someone's going to correct me, I'm sure, but it's Baseline and Mac, Old 8 Mile, and in 1955, the congregation relocated to what was called Grosse Pointe Baptist Church.
And that just, you know, it's interesting. That was around the time that Grosse Pointe Woods as a city, I believe, got chartered and began as its own city, is around that same time.
I think you're correct. Yeah. So in 40 years, Burns Avenue, 40 years, and the notes here say that there was a lot of good growth. Two world wars were fought, language transition, and yet God worked and ministry flourished. I think that's a beautiful statement. Two world wars, a pandemic, as you mentioned, which isn't mentioned here, and language issues, other things, and yet God blessed the church, and they continue to grow over the course of 40 years. It's neat.
Yeah, and a depression in there too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so 40 years, not meaning from Burns Avenue, but from all the previous two churches.
Well. So no, there's a lot of stuff going on in that period of history in the United States and in the world. And again, it's really worth underscoring that the development continued to grow. It kept multiplying. So we're now kind of in the historical part of starting the church where we currently physically are.
Yeah.
Although not the same name that we currently have, not the same exact identity and setup as we have today, but in the 50s, what was going on here at the location that we currently find ourselves?
Yeah, so the first service was Easter Sunday, April 10th, 1955. In 57 years, they'd grown from 82 to 682 members. So that's impressive and a beautiful thing and a testament of God's work. And so that first service, there was overflow crowd. I believe there's a picture that was taken from the first service that we have somewhere. And there was a whole week of dedication. They thank God for his leading in our past and looked to him for the challenges of the future. So even in the transition, what was our church doing? Looking to God for our future. It's a good thing.
Absolutely. And you know, too, this church at this point has had a few different iterations. So they know what it's like to start over, to relocate, to launch. And all these things are part of probably the collective memory of the people that are in that church to know, all right, God has been faithful to us. We know that he will continue to keep his promises mm-hmm. and that we can look to the future with that confidence. That's great. So now we've been at this location for quite a long time, but I'm sure it wasn't just, you know, things were business as usual for the last you know, number of decades.
Everything's perfect sense.
Everything's perfect. Everything's fine. It's fine. We're fine. What was kind of going on? What are some of the hallmarks that you've seen between then and now in the current location where we are?
Yeah. So something interesting as you look through some of the facts, missions and caring for other churches in the area pop out. So Marilyn and Norman Wolf, who are still members of our church, were sent to be short-term missionaries in Cameroon in 1968. That's a beautiful thing. And now you know that because you're listening to the podcast, so you can find them on a Sunday and bug them, ask them to share about their time in Cameroon. 1969, now, this could be German. It's either Jan Mitchell or Jan Mitchell. So I'm not 100% sure. It's J-A-N.
Apologies to either Jan or Jan.
Or both. They left for Cameroon as a short-term mission. Again, German. Louis Faust, that's what I'm going with, left for Japan as a missionary. From our church. In 1975, Garfield Baptist Church in Mount Clemens was incorporated as a church extension. There was community outreach. Our neighbors were invited to share a chicken dinner and have a patriotic concert, which was probably delicious. We should have more chicken dinners. A group of families left to form a church in East Detroit. Other missionaries, Fred Bartel and David Steinhardt, leave as short-term missionaries in 1977 to Cameroon. 1978, Awana was established, which we still do today. Renee Aldrich does a great job directing that, as well as our volunteers in that. The Memorial Fund was established. There were crusades for evangelism. There was the dedication of the, now it's called faceted glass, in our sanctuary. I have called it stained glass in the past, and I have been corrected. It is faceted glass. So the beautiful glass windows in our sanctuary were dedicated in 1980.
Can we interrupt you to ask a clarification?
Yes.
What is the difference between faceted glass and so-called stained glass?
Excellent question, Gary. I think faceted is laid in mortar. It's laid in concrete, much like a mosaic, and stained glass is like more connected glass to glass to form pictures. Now, there is some debate here amongst our staff and a bunch, but the faceted glass, every single one of those panes supposedly are a picture of a Bible story.
So we will see if we can find some additional information on this to put in the show notes, but that's a great start for us. But yeah, the point was to communicate visually stories from the Bible, and I would imagine that that tradition comes from a time when there were less people who were literate to read that for themselves.
I suppose it's pretty tough just to read. It is beautiful though. Lots of other stuff going there. In, let's see, 1982, the Grosse Pointe Baptist Community Nursery School was started, and that still exists today. Our nursery school, my oldest has gone there, my youngest will go there, and many people in our church come to our church now as a result of the nursery school, and that's a really neat thing. That's been a great ministry for our community, And so if you know our ministry, or our nursery school workers, if you know Lisa Moen or Kayla Clark, they work exceptionally hard, and that ministry is a beautiful thing for our church. And then Macomb Christian was also established in part because of our church, which no longer exists today, but had a ministry in Warren for a long time as a Christian school.
So one thing that I think is jumping out as we hear some of these milestones, some of these points of pride, are that there's a lot of things that deal with ministering to and serving the children, the youth in mm-hmm. our community. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, is that a coincidence or is that by design? Like, where does that come from?
Well, I think it's a heart for a community. I use a phrase that, well, this might be a little controversial, but a church without babies crying is a dying church. If we don't hear children rustling in the pews and, you know, if you don't have children and students in your church is not reaching the next generation. What's neat is this church has a history of reaching the next generation. It's a good thing, a part of our heritage, and is our working vision to reach families through effective children and student ministries. That's our working vision today. And so it is important for a church to care for families and the community in that manner.
Oh, that's wonderful. And so you can see, or rather you can hear, how that is rooted in a longstanding tradition of being able to reach families and youth in the community. So one of the things that I think would be really helpful for our listeners as we kind of bring our conversation here about the church history to a close is let's see if we can't look forward. So mm-hmm. kind of with the church history in mind, what are we looking forward to as we celebrate our 125th anniversary this year? What is coming up next? What are we looking forward to, and where do we see the next sort of direction of our church?
So just a couple things. In just our 125th year of existence, we're hoping to have a big event every month to unite our church body. Some of those events might be outreach in the community. Others might be for edification of the believers to build one another up. But we're trying to have something big every month that we do. And there's going to be a lot more information. You might have already heard about that by the time this comes out. But we want to have a big thing happening every month of the year. Not for us to say, look at us, we've made 125 years, but to really take advantage of saying, okay, God, you've given us 125 years. We're going to use this year and work hard to glorify you and to bring focus on who the Lord is and what he's done for us. And that, I think, expresses the same mission that was mentioned in this 90th anniversary, right? Our church hasn't changed in the sense that we want to worship God, proclaim the word of God, win people to Jesus Christ, seek spiritual improvement of our members, minister to our community, and extend the kingdom of God to all the earth. And we might word it differently, but it's the same goal. Looking forward, I think there's some things that all of our church members could think about. We have 125 years of existence. The last 2 years of our existence have been hard in the world. We've had church online for a little while back in 2020. We had a masked service, unmasked service. We've had masked sections, tape. Now at this recording, things are somewhat normal, although we're having another spike. It's been difficult. A lot of things have changed in the last 2 years. Some were forced, right? We had to change it. We had to change in certain areas. Even myself, we've changed the way we think about church. And I would caution that, right? So one of the things is we put a service online every week. It's on YouTube. It's live streamed on YouTube. It's then put on our website. You can go to it right now. You can look up any sermon going back years. I would really encourage believers to find a value in worshiping corporately as a present body of believers. If you're in our area, if you're living in this area and you're able to safely do so, I really think you should value being a part of our body present, being present at Crosspoint to worship together corporately, because I think Scripture calls for that. And I think that's what unites us and has kept us united for 125 years, is a corporate, present body of believers who are working together in unity for the gospel.
You know, I wanted to say that it is an important thing at any time. Because, I mean, the conditions now and for the past stretch of time have been particularly challenging. But even before there was anything such as a global pandemic going on in mm-hmm. our lives, we still had situations where people didn't see. I'll speak for myself. There was a period of time in my life where I did not see the value of face-to-face mm-hmm. worship. And understanding that forsaking the gathering, as the Bible describes it, is not something that is should be desirable if you can avoid it, that there's a special important blessing that is part of being physically present and alongside other people to worship, to hear the word preached, and to serve together for that matter. So it is something that's important for us. And we think, you know, from my standpoint, looking at discipleship, it's hard to grow in Christ when you are isolated.
The church was corporate from its very founding. It might have been small at the beginning. It grew rapidly in corporate worship. And yes, it was messy. You read Acts, it was messy. Even the apostles didn't get along all the time. So they had to figure that out. But they were still united and corporate. They were building churches, spreading out, building churches, spreading out, which is the heritage of our church.
Yeah, I think it's a really important point. And, you know, just to kind of put a one other word on that that stood out to me as you were saying this, when we think about that man is created in God's image, God is a divine community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think about in some faith traditions, they are monotheistic. And there is Unitarian, so to speak. There's God is one, and God is only one person.
Mm.
We are a Trinitarian faith. We believe that God is three in one, and the minimum number of persons you need for a community is three.
Mm.
In the image of God is embedded the idea of community, and so to be made in God's image is to be part of that divine community. That doesn't mean that our application to be part of the Trinity is accepted. That's not what I mean here. But we are made to be in community as God is a community. And so we're so thankful to be part of this community and the rich history that our church community has. And we look forward to the next 125 mm-hmm. years of impact and seeing what God will do with the people and with the opportunities that he gives us to be able to reach all the nations.
When I came to Crosspoint, I can't emphasize how much I understood what the importance of a community of believers and how beneficial it has been to me, both spiritually and my family, to be ministered to. We cannot lose that. We can't lose that. And so going forward, that has to be a focus.
So I think that's a great note for us to end on. And as you think about the history of the church from the very first days in 1897, launching Third American Baptist Church, to today as Crosspoint Christian Church in Grosse Pointe Woods, the focus is the same, making Christ the center of your life, being in community together to glorify God, to worship him, and to serve him, and to serve others and love others as we love him. Nate, is there any closing thought that you'd want to leave our listeners with as we wrap up today?
It's pronounced quasquicentennial. No, I even just messed it up there. Quasquicentennial. It's 125 years. Happy 125 years, Crosspoint.
Pastor Nate King, thanks for joining us on the show today.
Thank you.